Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're cutting through the noise on the most demanding organ in your body, the brain, and specifically the surprising connection between sugar, fiber, and, well, peak cognitive performance. If you really want to maximize focus, your memory, that sustained energy, you have to nail the fueling strategy for your brain. We spent the last few days digging into a bunch of sources, neurobiology studies, these big meta-analyses on short-term glucose effects, and the latest nutritional science on dietary fiber. Our mission, pretty clear, give you the exact framework you need to maintain, you know, optimal physical and mental energy.
And that framework, it's really built around stability. What's truly fascinating, I think, is how adaptable the brain is, how changeable, even in adulthood. That's neuroplasticity, right? Mm-hmm. Our sources really back this up. The brain is constantly rewiring, connecting different pathways based on the info it gets. And those pathways, they have real physiological outcomes tied to hormone production.
Right. The ultimate information processor.
Yeah.
But it comes at a cost, doesn't it? It's just such an energy hog. We know this statistic, but it still kind of shocks me every time I hear it.
It's almost unbelievable when you think about the weight comparison. The brain is only, what, 2% of your body weight?
Yeah.
Yet it burns through 20% of your body's total energy. 20. And that energy isn't optional. It's absolutely critical. It's fueling everything from just basic survival, keeping things stable, all the way up to complex decision-making, problem-solving, and it just needs constant, steady fuel.
And that fuel, when you boil it down, is glucose.
Yeah.
Sugar. We should be really clear here. The brain fundamentally depends on it. It's the main energy source for concentration, memory, learning. The brain literally cannot function without it.
Exactly. And that's why we see this thing called the glucose facilitation effect. We looked at a big meta-analysis, combined results from 65 different intervention studies. Often they had participants fast for a bit first, and they found a statistically significant positive effect from consuming glucose, specifically on immediate free recall memory.
Okay, they measured this with a standardized mean difference of 0.22. That sounds very technical. For someone, you know, maybe grabbing a sugary drink before a big meeting, what does that actually feel like? Is 0.22 a big jump in performance?
It's meaningful. Yeah, it's a consistent jump, especially for those immediate memory tasks. If 0.2 is the effect size, it means basically the group that got the glucose performed noticeably better right away. It's the biochemical reason why people sometimes reach for that sugar rush before an exam or presentation, that quick hit.
Okay, so that short-term burst is definitely real?
It is. But, and this is the crucial caveat, that benefit is short-lived. It's completely dependent on tightly regulated blood glucose levels, BGLs. The sources were really clear. Moderate or severe swings in blood sugar, too high, hyperglycemia, or too low, hypoglycemia, can instantly mess with neuronal function. It can even lead to cell death in extreme cases. So the key isn't just more fuel, it's stable, optimal fuel.
Stable, right.
And we even see differences between people. You know, poor overall glucose control that's consistently linked to poor cognitive performance generally. But what's interesting is sometimes a falling blood glucose level during a tricky task is linked with better recall.
How does that work?
It suggests the body might be kind of optimized when it's actively, steadily drawing down fuel. But that perfect level, it seems to be highly individualized, different for everyone.
That really sets the stage perfectly for, well, the dark side of this equation. Mm. If the brain loves stable, efficient fuel delivery, what happens when we just blast it constantly?
Yeah.
With chronic, excessive added sugar. Let's just talk about the scale of the problem for a second. The average U.S. adult consumes something like 17 teaspoons of added sugar every single day.
17, yeah.
That's easily 2 to 3 times the recommended daily limit.
And that adds up incredibly fast. 17 teaspoons a day translates to about 60 pounds of added sugar a year per person. It's hard to even picture that. 60 pounds, it's like, I don't know, feeding a small dog its weight in sugar every year.
Wow.
And where's it coming from? Mostly sugar-sweetened beverages, SSBs. They're the biggest single source, about 24%.
And that 24%, just think about one 12-ounce can of soda. That alone has 39 to 42 grams of sugar. That's 10 teaspoons right there. That one drink completely blows past the total daily recommendation for women.
And doing that frequently, that volume, it fundamentally starts to rewire your brain. Sure, a tiny bit gives you that temporary serotonin dopamine lift, activates the reward system, but that reinforces cravings. It leads to overeating these wasted calories, foods that don't actually make you feel full. Then the inevitable crash comes. Your brain feels that drop like an energy crisis, driving you to crave more sugar to start the whole cycle over again.
It sounds exactly like a biochemical addiction loop,
just
trapping you. Beyond that cycle, what about the long-term damage from that chronic inflammation, the metabolic stress?
The neurological fallout is pretty significant. Observational studies show a strong link between frequent, excessive added sugar, especially things like high fructose corn syrup and those sugary drinks, and long-term cognitive decline. We're talking measurable drops in overall cognitive function, serious impairment in learning and memory, and statistically higher risks for anxiety, depression, even dementia down the line. The underlying issue, chronic inflammation in the brain.
And physically, what about the specific type of sugar like fructose? How does the body handle that differently?
Right, so fructose is mainly processed in the liver. Unlike glucose, it doesn't really circulate widely for immediate energy in the same way. So excess fructose, it gets converted to fat almost immediately. This contributes directly to fatty liver disease and that dangerous visceral belly fat. Plus, those frequent, huge sugar spikes. They keep your insulin levels jacked up all the time. Eventually, that leads straight to insulin resistance.
Which is the gateway to metabolic disease.
Exactly. And it makes sustainable weight loss incredibly difficult.
Okay, so added sugar creates this systemic chaos, metabolic disaster, fat storage, all while undermining the stability the brain actually needs. We need a shield. A way to get the benefits of natural glucose without that catastrophic spike and crash. And that's where, finally, we bring in the essential regulator, dietary fiber.
Fiber is absolutely the hero here. It's the key to metabolic balance. Simply put, it's a carbohydrate your body can't digest. We just don't have the enzymes. So it passes through mostly undigested, acting like a natural internal break or buffer for everything else you eat.
We hear about soluble versus insoluble fiber a lot.
Yeah.
Can you just quickly remind us of the difference?
Sure. Soluble fiber, think oatmeal, apples, psyllium husket, absorbs water, becomes gel-like. It's fantastic for helping lower glucose and cholesterol levels. Insoluble fiber, that's your whole grains, leafy greens, it's more structural, adds bulk, it promotes, you know, healthy digestion and regularity. You really need both, but they work together to control how quickly nutrients get absorbed.
So how exactly does fiber perform this, like regulating magic? Does it physically block the sugar somehow? And I read something interesting that fiber is actually more effective than protein at directly moderating sugar absorption. Why do all the diet trends focus so much on protein first if fiber is this powerful?
That's a really good question. Protein definitely helps you feel full, no doubt. But fiber's mechanism is more direct, both physical and chemical. First, that direct moderation. Fiber adds bulk, literally slows down the entire digestive process, including sugar absorption. It prevents those sudden sharp spikes in blood glucose and insulin that refined sugars cause.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sort of encapsulates the food, it forces a slow, steady release, which is exactly what the brain thrives on.
Slow and steady.
Second is satiety, feeling full. Because the whole process is slower, your gut signals to your brain that you're full for much longer. This naturally reduces those cravings for quick-hit, high-sugar snacks later on, helps with weight control.
And then there's the third mechanism, the microscopic one, deep in the gut microbiome. This is where it gets really fascinating for the brain connection, right?
Absolutely. When fiber reaches your large intestine, your gut bacteria go to work fermenting it. This process produces these incredibly potent compounds called short-chain fatty acids, or SCFAs, things like butyrate, propionate, acetate.
Okay, SCFAs. Remind us quickly, why are these tiny fatty acids so crucial, especially for the brain link?
They're metabolic powerhouses, basically, and key communication signals. SCFAs regulate critical appetite hormones, especially leptin, that's your I'm full signal, and GLP-1, which boosts insulin sensitivity. This whole mechanism is a core part of the gut-brain axis. It ensures that the health of your digestive system is directly talking to your brain about stability and energy management.
So looking at the bigger health picture, how protective is a high-fiber diet beyond just metabolic health? Is it significant?
No, it's foundational. High fiber intake is linked to a really significant drop in the risk of cardiovascular disease. Our sources cited studies showing relative risk reductions down to 0.72. That means potentially cutting your risk of serious heart problems by almost 30% just by upping your fiber.
Wow, that's huge.
It is, and is also critical for managing type 2 diabetes. One study showed 50 grams a day was effective at improving glycolipid metabolism. Plus, it has protective effects against colon cancer, too.
Okay, this is great. Let's translate this into really practical advice for people listening. We know the official guidelines, AHA, WHO limit added sugars, 25 grams, about 6 teaspoons for women, 36 grams, 9 teaspoons for men daily. But when I'm actually looking at a packaged food label, how do I quickly figure out if it's good fuel or just setting me up for that crash?
You have got to focus on the sugar to fiber ratio. This is probably the single most important quick check for gauging a food's energy quality. Aim for a 5-to-1 ratio or better. That means for every 1 gram of fiber in that food, there should be 5 grams of sugar or less, ideally less.
Okay, 5 to 1 or better. Give us a direct comparison, like a natural food that nails it versus something that maybe looks healthy but fails that ratio test.
Perfect. Let's take an apple. A medium apple has about 19 grams of natural sugar, yes, but crucially, it also has around 4 grams of fiber. That's roughly a 5 to 1 ratio, bang on. The fiber buffers the sugar release. It's slow, steady fuel. Now think about a seemingly healthy granola bar from the store. Lots of them have maybe 14 grams of sugar, but only 1 gram of fiber, sometimes even less. That's a 14-to-1 ratio.
That's a total fail on the ratio.
Completely. And even if some of that sugar comes from natural sources like honey or fruit puree, the lack of fiber means that glucose hits your bloodstream almost as fast as straight table sugar. You get the same spike, the same crash, the same cravings later. You absolutely have to look past the health halo marketing and check that ratio on the nutrition label.
And we definitely need to mention the trap of processed fruits here too.
Oh, absolutely. Avoid fruit juice. Avoid dried fruit where the fiber has been stripped out or is just negligible compared to the concentrated sugar. Without that whole fiber matrix, you're basically getting sugar spikes almost identical to drinking a soda. Always, always choose the whole fruit. Get the natural buffering system.
Okay, finally, let's highlight some specific brain foods. The ones our sources really pointed to as actively protecting and optimizing those neural pathways.
Let's start with berries. Blueberries, blackberries, those dark fruits are fantastic. They're packed with specific antioxidants and flavonoids. What's special is these compounds seem to cross the blood-brain barrier and directly protect the memory centers, the hippocampus, from oxidative stress. Cellular cleanup, basically.
Cellular cleanup for the brain. Love it. What about vegetables?
Definitely focus on leafy greens, spinach, kale, collards. They contain lutein and vitamin K, which are strongly linked to slower cognitive decline. There are some really impressive long-term studies suggesting regular intake is linked to brain function that measures like 11 years younger.
11 years younger? That's incredible.
It is. Also, broccoli is great. It has sulforaphane, known for detoxifying and potent anti-inflammatory effects, including in the brain. Even beets can help. They boost nitric oxide production, which improves blood flow, specifically to brain areas needed for high-level thinking.
And nuts. People sometimes worry about the calories in nuts.
Nuts are essential, partly because of their density, that high fiber and healthy fat content. It promotes massive, sustained satiety, feeling full for longer. That's critical for managing weight long-term and controlling those urges for sugary snacks between meals. Plus, nuts like peanuts are highly protective against cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. They can absolutely be part of a successful weight management plan.
Okay, so this deep dive has really clarified things. The brain needs glucose, that's non-negotiable. But the chronic, unbuffered hit of added sugars, that leads straight to metabolic chaos and potentially neurocognitive decline. Fiber emerges as the absolute key. It's what lets you fuel your brain steadily, get that focus and sustained energy without the damaging crash.
And as we wrap up, here's one final, maybe slightly provocative thought for you to chew on. A lot of that early foundational research establishing the glucose facilitation effect, you know, showing sugar helps short-term memory-used artificial sweeteners like saccharin or aspartame as the control, the placebo. But our sources noted these artificial sweeteners themselves have now been linked in some studies to potential cognitive impairment, behavioral issues, and even altered glucose tolerance.
Wait, so the neutral comparison substance they used might have actually been harming cognitive function in the control group.
Precisely, which raises this huge question. In those early trials, were we truly measuring the benefit of the glucose? Or were we maybe just observing the detriment caused by the artificial sweetener they used as a comparison? It just highlights how incredibly complex nutrition and cognition research is, and why we constantly need more precise studies looking at every single component in our diet.
That is a really powerful question to think about. Wow. Okay, prioritize fiber. Aim for that 5-to-1 ratio always and give your brain the stable, high-quality fuel it truly deserves. Thanks for diving deep with us today.